It was during the time of the bug buffet at MSU. You know, I was seeing all these people there having fun trying these insects, and they were trying them, they were eating them. So I go home and I go, James, I wanna start a cricket farm.
This is Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, a podcast that explores why Montana leads the nation in entrepreneurship and business startups. I'm Arnie Sherman. Save a cow, eat a cricket. Not what you might expect to hear in a ranch or farm in Montana, but that's the slogan for Cowboy Cricket Farms, an award-winning startup located in the middle of Montana in the small town of Belgrade. Challenged with more demand than capacity for cricket powder, frass, cowboy chirp cookies, we'll find out today on Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, what Cowboy Cricket Farms is doing to meet their customers' appetite for the crunchy critters. This show is made possible with support from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. We welcome Kathy and Jim Rowland, along with their three children, and also they're the parents of over a million crickets and growing. Isn't that right?
Yeah, right now, actually, we're at about 4 million.
4 million.
And by the end of the year, hopefully, it'll be closer to 22 million.
How fast do crickets multiply? It sounds pretty fast.
Very quick. In January, when we actually started the farm, we started with just 20,000 crickets. And since then, you know, we've gotten up to 4 million. So it's their whole lifespan is only 8 weeks, and a single female can lay over 100 eggs per day. So they multiply very quickly.
So let me be candid with you. Some of our listeners might not even tune in because they think the idea of eating bugs is gross or repugnant. What do you say about that? I mean, how did you get into this, and why is this the right thing for people to do?
So we need to move to alternative sources of protein because as a population of the world, we're expanding way too quickly for our current farming standards to keep up with us. And so I came up with this idea while attending Montana State University. I was in a food fundamentals class, and we talked about alternative sources of protein. And we briefly talked about insect protein, and I thought it was just a fantastic idea, especially with crickets. They're often referred to as the gateway bug because you can grind
you
them.
Start with crickets,
exactly.
And next thing you know, you're eating
tarantulas.
Fantastic.
Tarantulas.
That's exactly the idea. So with crickets, you roast them, you dry them, and then you grind them up into a fine powder, and you can use that powder as a ready-to-eat source of protein, or you can even bake with it if you change out some of the flour in the recipe.
And these are just common household crickets?
Correct. So a lot of the ones that you see here in Montana jumping around, those are field crickets. And they're usually black in color. They've got a square head, and they're smaller than ours. What we grow is Aketa domesticus. And like you said, it's known as the common house cricket. It's found all over the world. And they're better tasting, they're more nutritious, and they're easier to grow.
The field crickets don't taste as good.
Yeah.
And yeah, obviously you've tasted both of them.
A couple times.
So what were you doing when you started to do this business? I mean, you at one point were in the Coast Guard, right?
I was. So the Coast Guard would have been about 6 years ago. I left after having my first child, and we tried our hand at another business. It was a family fun center, and just it was down the economic downturn of the country, and just people weren't spending money as much, so it didn't work out.
Families weren't having much fun.
Exactly,
that point, right?
Exactly. So we eventually made our way up to Montana, and at MSU, I got the idea, and we're like,
and did you have to talk James into it?
I did. So yes, when I got the idea, it was during the time of the bug buffet at MSU, and you know, I was seeing all these people there having fun trying these insects, and they were trying them, they were eating them. So I go home and I go, James, I wanna start a cricket farm. What?
And what did you say exactly, James, at that point?
Well, I thought she was a little bit crazy. She comes home with all sorts of kooky ideas.
I do.
And
I'm a dreamer.
I just thought, well, that's interesting. And she kept pushing me. And my background is in marketing and economics. And I thought, okay, fine, I'll oblige and start looking into it. And it took me about 6 months until I finally figured out, wow, I think she's right. The only fault that we could find in the industry is people's mental stigma against eating insects.
Right, and that obviously is a big issue.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there are people that I've mentioned, you know, we were doing this show and they say, crickets, why would anybody be eating crickets? Maybe in developing countries, but you know, what's the case for Americans eating them?
Yeah, a lot of people, they think of insects and they think, oh, well, that's third world countries and, like you said, developing nations. They're the only ones that would ever eat it because they have to. But that's just not true. There's actually many developed countries around the world. About 80% of the world's cultures eat insects or bugs in some form.
Right. I know, for example, in Mexico, it's always been part of a dietary tradition.
Mexico, Thailand, Vietnam. And we're talking about, the high centers. There's, hog cuisine that is insect-based.
Sure.
And so it's not a matter of it being, poor food or anything like that. It's just a matter of availability and cultural stigma. So the reason we do it is twofold. One, there's the health benefits. We have two times the iron compared to beef. It's about two-thirds protein. They're really high in omega-3 fatty acids, which are good for heart and brain health. And on top of that, you have the environmental side. So again, compared to beef, you're 2,060 times more efficient with crickets, 14 times more efficient with their feed. They produce 80 times less methane, use less than 1% of the comparable landmass.
So that's a pretty compelling argument. Did you use that argument to raise money to start? I mean, did you need money to start this up? Most startups do.
Absolutely. So our funding came from a couple interesting sources. One, a bit non-traditional. Are you familiar with Volkswagen and when they had their little diesel crisis?
Yes.
Okay, so we owned a Volkswagen at the time. And when I was gone for about 7 months with the military, we saved up enough money to pay it off, came back. A year later, decided to start the business, and all of this happened with Volkswagen. So we actually turned that in, got the buyout, and put all of that money into the business.
So self-finance, like a lot of entrepreneurs do. And then you've won a couple of business plan competitions that got you some capital for this.
Absolutely. They've been pivotal, not just for the financial aspect, but also for the networking. We've met people that have truly changed and advanced our businesses. But we won the MSU Live Pitch Competition.
So the Montana State University Live Pitch.
Correct. And then also the University of Montana John Raffetto Business Plan Competition.
Yeah.
We took first place, audience award, most likely launch.
There's another one. I can't remember exactly. But
best manufactured product. So we won four out of, I think,
and how much capital did that collectively between MSU and UM did that provide for your business?
Those two combined with one other is about $26,000. So all in debt-free financing.
That happened within the first 5 months of even existing.
So that was pretty special as a real good launch.
Absolutely.
And now you're engaged in a Kickstarter campaign. Is that correct?
Correct. So right now, as of the 15th, we've got a Kickstarter campaign going. In order to
15th of September.
Correct, 15th of September. In order to help to support our new commercial kitchen. Right now, we're having to go over the pass to Livingston, and besides having extra expense in the wintertime, that's just going to be very dangerous.
Sure.
So we want to be able to control the process ourselves and have our own commercial kitchen.
So how is the business customer end of this going so far? Do you have interest in your product? Are people buying it? Where's the product mix headed?
So we knew there was going to be a lot of outreach and education. So I came up with the chocolate chirp cookies.
Yes.
And we...
Which, thank you. You brought me one today. I'll be eating it shortly after the
Yes,
show.
Please do. So we developed this cookie because we needed to show people what the powder could be used for.
Right.
And we never intended the cookie to be an actual product. We intended to give these away just for educational purposes.
Right.
And we had such a positive response that we started selling them, and they sell quite fast. One location in particular in Bozeman, they go through 48 cookies about a week and a half, 2 weeks. I think that's incredible for a product that we never intended to be a product.
Sure. And the powder, as I read in your literature, it sells for $43 a pound?
Yeah, right now it does. And, we don't really want to sell it for that much. It's just, it's expensive to produce.
Mm-hmm.
We're still trying to get the business, really completely built up and off the ground. There's a lot of physical infrastructure.
Right.
And we're still a little bit below going market value compared to most of our competitors. But our goal in the next 5 years is to get the retail costs down to around $10. That way it's more accessible to more people.
And how many competitors are there for cricket powder?
Well, in the U.S., there's about a dozen farms. By the end of this year, we'll be the second largest cricket production in the U.S. But the largest in North America is in Canada, and the largest in the world is in Thailand.
Mm-hmm.
And Thailand makes more crickets than the entire rest of the world combined. So,
and they're using it domestically in Thailand in food production?
Correct. However, they also ship to the U.S. And unfortunately, because of the low production of edible insects in the U.S., the food manufacturers here are having to go over to Thailand to get that. And it's a substandard product.
Sure.
It's not regulated by any of the, you know, food.
Same thing as like in the nutraceutical industry when you bring in things in from abroad that don't meet necessarily the same standards we have here.
Correct.
So who are the go-to customers? Who here? Let's say you have your new kitchen, you're percolating, euthanizing millions and millions of crickets. Who's buying it? Who's your go-to customers?
So we have three basic customers. There's our retail side, which is generally people who are really interested in fitness, though we have some that have specific diets, keto diets, for instance, which some people use in the nutrition fitness world, also help people, especially children with epilepsy issues. And mm-hmm. so there's high fat, high protein diets that are very difficult to sustain. But our powder allows those children to eat regular meals by just mixing the powder into it. They don't have to change what they want to eat. They can be just like their friends.
So is there a way to even enhance that further? I mean, is there a way to, I don't know if it's bioengineer, but is there a way to produce crickets that have greater, benefit?
Absolutely. In fact, we're
funny that you mentioned that.
Yeah, right now we
bionic cricket.
not quite bionic. That'll come next year. But no, right now we actually have a grant funded by the state of Montana to develop what we're calling the super cricket, and it's not a big bioengineered cricket. It's basically a process that we're developing in order to make a higher omega-3 vitamin E and vitamin B12 cricket. And mm-hmm. the purpose is when you look at things like fish production, which is generally where people get a lot of their omega-3, it's very environmentally inefficient. It's very expensive. And you have issues like what you just saw in Washington a few weeks ago, where a salmon farm, the walls of it collapsed. They got into the river system, and now they're starting to be an invasive species there. And they're having to take radical, mm-hmm. But you know what happens if our crickets get out in mass in January?
What, they have a party?
No, they freeze.
They freeze, yeah.
Yeah. You know what happens if they escape in August? They chirp for about a month, and then they freeze. So they can't hurt anything, and they're already here. They're not they're an endemic species to the world.
We have a cricket wrangler, so we're covered.
So that brings me to the point of you have employees that work for you in the cricket farm?
We do. We have two employees right now. They're part-time. We're hoping to be able to bring them up to full-time beginning of the new year.
And for our listeners, how do you prepare crickets for use as food? What's the process?
So basically, once the eggs are laid, it's about 11 days. We keep our entire environment extremely controlled for humidity, air quality, and temperature. Mm-hmm. So 11 days later, they hatch, right on the money.
Right.
And then from there, they're put into what I call their forever home, which is the bin that they'll be in for the next 8 weeks.
Right.
They grow up. They eat a certified organic, corn-free, soy-free, grown in Montana chick feed. So it's actually designed for chickens, but we've modified it so that it works well for crickets. And then 8 weeks later, as we just continue maintaining them, eventually they're adults. We allow them to breed. And after that, they're put into a freezer. And now the freezer is important because not only does it kill them so that we can actually process them, but also it's part of their natural life cycle. Generally going into the winter time, they would go underground and go into stasis. The weaker ones would die off. The strong ones would wake up in the springtime. So mm-hmm. we just emulate that. We take them from summer going into fall, and then we put them into winter. And then we drop, after they're in stasis, we drop that temperature down to where they're actually dead. Mm-hmm. After that, we can dehydrate them. We treat them like poultry. So we bring them to the absolute highest standards that we can for food safety.
Right.
And then they're milled in a grain mill down to a fine powder.
So how did you learn how to do all of this? You just laid out a very fascinating, business cycle for your product. Where'd you learn to do it the right way?
Well, Kathy and I have had a pretty interesting path trying to figure this out. Believe it or not, there's just no books out there for this.
I wouldn't believe that.
YouTube was helpful, though.
Yeah, YouTube has been very helpful. Also, we work very closely with Montana State University, including Dr. Florence Dunkel, who's an entomologist there who's been studying crickets for about 40 years now. So she knows the life cycle pretty well. And then we've also worked really closely with Kraft Crickets out of Oregon and Iowa Cricket Farmer out of Iowa. We work with them so that when one of us has an issue, we go to the other two and we're able to say, hey, you know, we're having this problem. We don't know how to do this. What have you found that works? And so as an industry, the three of us are trying to kind of grow. And you know, we welcome other farms in, just some of them aren't as willing to share.
Sure.
And Iowa and Kraft Crickets, they've been completely instrumental to our survival and to keeping sanity. When we had our first egg lay, it was 8-9 days and there was no hatches. We were getting quite worried. You know, that's our whole business model is breeding crickets. And so we called them and said, oh, well, just sometimes it takes a little bit longer. Just give it a little bit more time. It was the very next day we had our first hatch, and just there's such a weight lifted off our shoulders that we successfully bred the crickets.
I'm sure. We're talking with Kathy and James Rowland from Cowboy Cricket Farms in Belgrade, Montana. So, how do you make this into the kind of business that you envision it to be? I mean, it's a small operation now, even though 22 million crickets sounds like a lot. How do you build a business? You haven't run a business before except for the fund center, and that was not as successful as you wanted it to be for what happens to a lot of businesses, factors outside your control. Nobody knows when an economic downturn may come about or when, you know, something changes in, you know, environment. Where are you going to build your business knowledge for this?
Well, you know, from that failed business, and we had a couple others that had different, you know, varying degrees of success, we learned a lot. And so what we're doing now is we're applying what we've learned from those businesses towards this. And I think that's a big reason why it's been so successful is that, you know, we're not going into this blind. We already have made the mistakes, and they've cost us a lot of money. And so now, you know, we have the opportunity to not make those again.
So basically, give me an example of one of the mistakes you made that cost a lot of money. I'm just curious.
How about not actually doing your due diligence on a business? Not looking into the local economy and whether or not it can support. No matter what happens outside, you need to have a variety of ways to fund a business. And that's what we're doing with this. You know, people look at it and they go, oh, you sell crickets. Well, that's part of it. We do, and I mean, don't get me wrong, it's called Cowboy Cricket Farms for a reason.
Right.
But crickets themselves are only part of it. We also have a R&D side, so we do research for the university, for the state, and that helps to fund us as well. And then we also sell the frass, which is the cricket poop, and that's a fantastic fertilizer. However, its market is not in any way related to the market of selling cricket powder.
Right, it's a fertilizer that competes with other fertilizer.
Right, so essentially we have three different businesses that all work out of the same entity, and that's why we can be better rounded. So as long as we can get this off the ground, we don't have to worry about, oh, the cricket industry just collapsed or it got a bump for some reason. Well, that's okay. We've got frass and research. Oh, all the research dried up. Well, we still have frass and the other ones. For some reason, stop buying cricket frass. Well, we've got the other two. And we're trying to add even more. That's why we have our wholesale side of things direct to food manufacturers, and then we have our retail side to the consumers. Again, splitting that risk into two different sides.
So, Kathy, you came here with James today, who we're happy to have you. We didn't know we were going to have him. He was called up as part of the National Guard call-up to fight fires here in Montana, and we'll be going back to doing that, and your three children. What is it like to run a family business? I mean, you're going to work with your husband every day. You know, so what is that like for you?
I mean, when he's there, it's fantastic. We get a lot done. Sometimes we bump heads, but that's just us growing. The hardest part is when he is gone with the National Guard, three kids plus a full-time farm.
Plus 22 million crickets.
Exactly. And I'm a part-time student at Montana State University. So it's a lot. I'm ready for him to come home. That's for sure.
So when you're both there, I mean, what do you say to, you know, you're doing a Kickstarter campaign, you've raised some money, mm-hmm. you're going to probably need more money in the future and to, you know, to build a bigger business. You know, what do you say to the to someone who says, you know, you're a part-time student, you're family, you're on the National Guard. Are you really serious about committing yourself to this business?
You know, I think you have to think about today and 5 years from now, and you need to plan for both of them accordingly, while also making sure that you're able to keep yourself happy. You know, Kathy doesn't have to go to school right now. She wants to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
And so we make it work. We do stay quite busy, and trust me, every time I meet a new group of people and they delve farther and farther into what it is that we do, they just kind of go, wait, what don't you do? You know,
right.
we've done law enforcement and sales and military and just, you know, mechanics and everything you could imagine in the world, it seems at this point. And, but we're really happy with where we are. So, you know, I think that's the key, is just to stay busy and stay happy and not really worry about what everyone else necessarily has to say.
Right.
You know, we want to listen to them. We want their feedback, but not from the people that aren't going to make a difference.
Right.
Because most people who thought about this business in January or November when we started to look for places, they thought we were insane. I did when she first brought me the idea.
Sure.
And now we've won, you know, 4 or 5 business awards, have 2 government grants. We have people coming to us to ask us questions about, you know, how did you do this and what can I do? Right. And that's all in the span of 8 months.
Well, you both have a lot of enthusiasm for this. So what does your plan say you're going to be doing 3 years from now?
Well, you know, I guess we've got a few different options. Right now we're in a 2,000 square foot facility. Getting this kitchen off the ground was a big part of it. And that wasn't supposed to happen until next year, and we had the ability to do it this year
mm-hmm.
because things have honestly ballooned quicker than we thought. So we're able to do that now, which puts us a little bit ahead of schedule, but ultimately we need to get a larger farm, and we also have some technology that we're working on to help to automate the process and make it more accessible to other people that want to get into the industry. Because right now there's a gap. Not enough people are growing crickets compared to the demand. And that's part of the reason why the price is so high.
Right. You would find that, I mean, the average person would find that probably, you know, hard to believe that there's more demand
yeah.
than there is crickets available for the demand.
Yeah.
And this has just been recent, correct?
Right. So, I mean, in the U.S., if you look at the history of edible insects or entomophagy, back in the mid-80s, a company called Hotlicks started in mm-hmm. California. And they're still around and they're booming and they sell the little lollipops with crickets and mealworms and scorpions in them.
Right.
Until 2013, that's all it was. It was this weird novelty. People did it to be different or, you know.
Well, that's domestically, obviously.
Right.
Another place, I mean, I've spent a lot of time in Asia, and there's all kinds of insects and things
yeah.
that we don't normally consider, you know, delicacies here that they do in other cultures.
Right. I'm strictly talking about the U.S.,
right.
you know. Overseas, no, this has been normal for thousands of years. But in the U.S., this is really new. So in 2013, something very important happened. United Nations FAO, which is their agricultural organization,
right.
put out a report about edible insects, and it's 380-something pages long, I think. And it's all about farming them for food and feed, so to feed other types of agriculture like chicken. And then it also talks about the environmental side and the health side and why. And that is when a large governmental agency first officially said, we need to do this. Not, hey, maybe, not here's a little bit of research. It's we need to do this before our population reaches 9 billion in the year 2050.
Right.
And since then, you've had a couple little startups just trickle and trickle, and now over a dozen a year are starting up. And
so you're really on the cutting edge of this.
Yeah.
You know,
the whole industry is only a few years old.
And is Montana, being in Montana, an advantage or a handicap?
Yeah. I think it's a huge advantage.
It is. We thought we were going to have so much pushback because we always talk about beef. And don't get me wrong, we eat hamburgers and stuff. But the fact is that when you start to, you know, essentially attack what is one of the largest industries and most well-known industries of a state, maybe there could be some pushback.
Right.
And instead, it's been the opposite. I think, you know, the farmers are realizing we're not going to be taking, you know, money out of their pockets anytime soon. What we're doing is we're creating an alternative. And that's
mm-hmm.
also what the Department of Agriculture has seen. And they have been so supportive of us.
Well, that's really good.
Yeah. The state has been, you know, they really seem to understand what it is that we're trying
to
do.
Well, the other thing is for just in general, in terms of sales around the United States. Montana does have a brand. I mean, the Montana brand to many people means, you know, it's wholesome and, you know, we're self-reliant and things, you know, in the manufacturing sector, you know, a Montana connection, you know, adds a lot of value added to any kind of product line. So, I'm glad that you're finding that in practical, you know, terms in your business.
Yeah. I mean, we're both transplants here. You know, we're not originally from Montana, but this is our home. We absolutely love it. We've lived all over the nation and Bozeman, but Montana in general is just where we belong.
You're stuck with us.
Yep.
and you're crickets.
Yes, yep. Absolutely.
We've been talking with Kathy and James Rowland about their award-winning business, Cowboy Cricket Farms in Belgrade, Montana. The couple is currently raising funds to expand their alternative farming adventure, one cricket at a time. This show is made possible with support from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. I appreciate your listening to Can-Do Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, produced by Autumn Barnes and Beth Ann Austin in association with Montana Public Radio. For comments, recommendations for future guests, or general information, please go to mtpr.org. There you can also find previous guest contact information and content from previous shows. Listen next time to hear from Danica Winters, talking about her career as a romance novelist and publishing hotshot. Once again, I'm Arnie Sherman, wishing you peace and prosperity.